You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
So this week on Dear Science, we have quite the selection of stories. And we're starting off by talking about maths and how it impacts our learning.
Ooh, there you used two of my favourite words there. Impact is a verb and learning. So.
Ooh.
Anyway, maths is good for you. And, you know, that's the short and sweet of it. Maths is now officially good for you. So there's a paper published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, which is pretty much the top journal, top science journal in the US, or certainly one of them anyway. And it's a bunch of workers at Oxford University, which you may have heard of. And what they did was that they studied around about 130 students aged 14 to 18 in the UK. And in the UK, at age 16, you can stop doing maths at high school.
It's the same here.
Same here, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, okay, well, let's read on and see whether that's a good idea or not. So what they did was this cohort who got, I think, £35 iTunes vouchers in return for all of this, they underwent a brain scan, so an MRI, and they also had a cognitive maths assessment. And then they were followed up with the same thing 19 months later. Okay, so what they found, what the researchers found, and this is extraordinarily interesting, so they found that the concentration of a thing called gamma-aminobutyric acid, which is one of those words that just rolls off the tongue if you're a chemist. So this is a molecule in the brain, and it's a neurotransmitter in the brain, and it's very, very important in what they call brain plasticity. And brain plasticity is all to do with the fact that you are making all of these connections in your brain as your brain develops. And your brain develops through your teenage years, and by the time, I guess, you hit sort of your 20s or whatever, then pretty much you're hardwired in. So, you know, all of those brain connections are made. But during your teenage years, you know, your brain is busy making these connections, breaking those connections, everything, just, you know, getting everything right for your adult years, I suppose. And so what they found was that students who had stopped learning maths at the age of 16, the levels of gamma-butyric acid in their brains actually fell. And that is quite remarkable. And what they were looking at was a particular region of the brain. So they're looking at the region of the brain that supports maths and memory and learning, reasoning and problem solving. So, you know, it's kind of an important bit of the brain.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah. And so basically the guts of it is that those levels would decrease once you stopped learning maths, which is quite incredible. So, you know, up until the age of 16, so they found that, you know, the levels would remain constant. And then if you stopped learning maths, then the levels would drop. Whereas if you kept learning maths, then those levels would stay at sort of that pre-16 level. Which, you know, so basically what they're saying is that this is really, really important in terms of your brain development, that the actual act of learning maths keeps your brain plastic. It keeps it in good nick. And I think that's an incredible finding, really. And I'm kind of wondering how they sort of narrow it down to that one particular.
I was going to say, is there more things that could make it plastic?
Well, surely chemistry, you would hope, you know. But
what about like the arts?
Oh, hey, I'm a big supporter of the arts, you know, music, you know, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But so what they are saying, and it seemed to be in the paper as well, they reckon that you could sort of replace the whole maths thing with any sorts of sort of puzzles or working things out, or, you know, crosswords or Sudoku or whatever, you know, that sort of thing, that possibly seemed like it might have a similar sort of effect or whatever. So it's just, I guess, keeping your brain ticking over and doing that sort of stuff. But I think it's a, you know, it's an amazing finding, and maybe the educationalists might want to advocate then maybe for us maybe teaching maths until, you know,
I think you might get quite an uproar from a lot of students.
Well,
I'm sorry,
but I've got to say that when you have students in your class who need a calculator to divide by one, then something is horribly wrong.
Simple as that. I can tell you that is a problem.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think the more maths, the better.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Moving on to something that's just as exciting as maths, organisms that are like really, really old and they keep reproducing.
Yeah, I know. This could be a bit scary, actually. So these are things called Daloid rotifers. And for those of you listening, the B is silent. It's actually written B-D-E-L-L-O-I-D, Daloid, apparently. So it's got a silent B at the start of the word. That's kind of unusual. Anyway, these things called Daloid rotifers. So they are microscopic invertebrates, and they look a little bit like worms. And so it's already known that these things are really rather tough, that they can survive conditions that other things just can't. So
they can... Better than the water bears? I've forgotten what they're called. The little creatures that can survive like pretty much anything.
Well, there's cockroaches as well. They can survive pretty much anything as well. But these guys can survive radiation and low oxygen levels. They can be starved and they're okay. And they can be desiccated or they can be dried out, essentially. And these guys can survive. So they've got an amazing metabolic system that allows them to survive all of these nasty conditions. So, so far so good. But what has just been found? Now, these things are 35 million years old. They have been around for a long, 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 long time. So there's some scientists in Russia who were looking at some permafrost regions up in the Arctic where they'd been drilling for, I don't know, oil or something like that. So they had a whole lot of these... bits of permafrost earth and stuff. And so they're digging around in there and they found some of these Daloid rotifers. So in the permafrost, not too surprising really. What was surprising is that they took them into the lab, they warmed them up and these guys came back to life, number one.
Oh my God.
Okay, now they radiocarbon dated these things to an age of 24,000 years old. Okay, so these things have been sitting in the permafrost for 24,000 years. They warm them up, they're living again. Even worse, they reproduce.
We should not be touching permafrost. We should not be touching permafrost.
Leave it there.
So now these are very unusual. They are exclusively female, these things, and they manage to reproduce by cloning themselves. God knows how that works, but it does. So these things not only had them in frozen for 24,000 years, but as soon as you thaw them out, they then start reproducing. And this raises all sorts of questions because the one great thing that possibly a lot of people know about chemistry is that when you freeze water, it expands. Okay? Yeah. And that's why you burst your pipes in the winter. So you've got these cells in your body and you've got them in a sort of an aqueous medium and stuff like that. So as soon as you get below zero, then your aqueous medium will freeze. And essentially what that normally does is it bursts the cells. And that's why, you know, this whole thing about suspended animation or whatever, you know, if we're going to freeze people and then bring them back to life and stuff like that, you're going to have to get over or around that problem somehow. And nobody's been able to sort of really do that. Maybe Walt Disney, if the rumors are true. Supposedly he's in a vault somewhere under Disneyland. If you read the internet, when it's not down,
sounds
dubious. Suspended animation. Yeah.
If anyone could do it, Walt Disney could. Magic.
But that's a big problem. And now these things, these Daloid rotifers, can obviously do this. They can survive being frozen for 24,000 years. And that raises, I think they said in the paper, it raises a lot more questions than it actually answers, which is absolutely true. But, you know, these things definitely deserve more study. And then, as you guys were sort of implying, hell, what else is down there?
Yeah, I was going to say, so tardigrades were the...
Okay, yeah.
Are they better than tardigrades at surviving stuff?
Yeah. I hope it's not a competition. That's the thing. But, Yeah, so very, very interesting science going on there.
Yeah.
And just goes to show what we don't know, I guess.
Yeah.
Heaps that we don't know.
Yeah. Well, looking at moving society forward and all that sort of stuff, we've seen the approval of a new Alzheimer's drug over in the US, aducanumab.
Yep.
Which has had a lot of discussion around it and how good it is and whether it's the right step to be taking and around the trials that have been done.
Yep.
Do you want to sort of go into all of this?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is just, I guess, another drug that has gone through the drug approval process, which is long and torturous and costs a hell of a lot of money. And obviously the drug companies can get all the way to, let's say, phase three in a drug trial, and then everything can fall over there, and then they've spent a hell of a lot of money for no return. So, but this is the way that the FDA, the Federal Drug, the Food and Drug Administration, sorry, does it. So what has happened is that this new drug, aducanumab, this is the first Alzheimer's drug that has been approved in over 20 years. So at present, there's really no effective treatment for Alzheimer's. And I imagine it's an awful, awful thing to both experience and to have your loved ones experience as well. You know, it's just a terrible, terrible affliction. And so any treatment for this obviously has got to be good. But, and this is a big but, so the company that are releasing this, so a company called Biogen, they went through the drug approval process. Now, the FDA, for some reason, allowed them to skip phase two of the drug approval process. So there's normally three phases to getting a drug approved. So there's phase one, where you take healthy volunteers and you give them particular doses, and so you figure out sort of doses and stuff like that. And then the stage two, where you take patients and you are testing the drug for efficacy, so whether it does anything or not, and also side effects. And then phase three, you're testing on patients again for efficacy and effectiveness now. So, you know, whether it does anything or not and how well it actually does that. So the effectiveness and also safety as well. So these guys are allowed to skip phase two of this, which probably took years and a few zillion dollars off the time and the cost of doing all of this. And so they were doing the phase three trials in 2019, and they had two trials going, and they basically called them both off before the due date. And that was due to a thing called futility analysis, where basically they decided that going on with the test was futile, that they weren't going to get any positive results out of it. And so there it would have ended. But then apparently what Biogen did was they reanalyzed the data that had come from both studies, and there was some sort of late data that had come in from one of the studies. And essentially one of the studies said yes and the other one said no. So, you know, they were sort of saying, oh, yes, you know, this might help. And then the other said basically no. So they gave this to the FDA, and the decision came out this week, and the FDA has now approved this. And there is a lot of questioning of that particular decision, given, you know, it's certainly not cut and dried as to whether this thing is going to actually help. But having said that, you can imagine that, you know, anybody with Alzheimer's is going to, you know, make a beeline to their doctors and say, look, please, I need to be on this. They're reckoning there are about 2 million people in the US that have got Alzheimer's, and at a cost of roughly, say, $20,000 to $50,000 per annum for this. That's the you know, the rough cost, the estimated cost. You can see there's an awful lot of money in this. There's an awful lot of people who really, really want to be helped by this. It's just a matter of whether they're going to be or not. So I don't know where to from here. I don't know whether there's any sort of appeal of an FDA decision on drugs or not, but yeah, it will be interesting to see how it goes. I mean, you know, I was reading last night sort of emails or messages from doctors basically saying that they wouldn't prescribe their Alzheimer's patients this because it would be giving them false hope, and you know, there's nothing worse than false hope in a situation like that. So I guess let's wait and see how it all pans out. It's not really a good situation. You know, you would imagine that something like this should be fairly cut and dried if it's going to get approval. It doesn't seem to be, but, you know, this isn't my area of expertise, so I remain to be stand corrected. So,
A solemn way to end Dear Science, but that was Dear Science.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.